Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Lance Meadow, John Schmelk, 201-939-4513. That's Lance, by the way. I'm John, if you didn't know
Glad
that.
You clarified that.
201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. Giants and Seahawks getting ready to go on Sunday afternoon, 425 MetLife Stadium. And the Giants, of course, trying to win their second straight game to get to 2-5 heading into the bye. And Lance, I know a lot of Giant fans think it's academic at this point, but with the Rams and Niners coming out after the bye week, there's a big difference between 2-5 and 1-6 at the bye week.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, listen, at this point, the Giants want to start to gain some momentum. So it's the basic of trying to build off of what they accomplished in Denver and whether or not they could carry that over. And listen, they're going up against another extremely stingy defense for the second straight week. I know the Seahawks, the numbers don't jump off the page, John, like they have had in previous seasons when you look at where they rank statistically. But if you rely on your eyes, which is what you should do more often than not, this is a legitimate defense with a number of Pro Bowlers and a number of guys who are extremely well-disciplined, specifically in the secondary. So, you know, even though Seattle may not be top five in every category, this is not a defense to overlook and dismiss.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that. Me and Paul did a lot of preview yesterday. We'll get Lance's take on the game today. But let's talk about the injuries for a second. The Seahawks have not issued their injury report yet, mostly because it's 9 a.m. where they're practicing out in Seattle. But the Giants have, which is really the good thing about this early Friday Ben McAdoo press conference. Now we get the Giants' full injury report early in the day so we can discuss it on Big Blue Kickoff Live, which is great. The good news is that Sterling Shepard is questionable after missing the last game and a half with an ankle injury. So the Giants hope he'll be ready to go. Sterling Shepard seemed to be confident in the locker room the last couple of days that he'd be ready to go, but it'll be a game-time decision. We'll see. And, of course, some of the guys that are not back, unfortunately, for the Giants, Olivier Vernon still with the ankle, Jonathan Casillas, the neck/burner, Paul Perkins, the ribs, Weston Richburg, the concussion protocol, and Calvin Munson with the quad are all out. So the Giants will still be a little shorthanded on Sunday.
They will, but it does look like they will probably follow suit from last game and go with the same offensive line with Weston Richburg being out. Brett Jones will start again at center, and, I mean, barring any changes or last-second injuries, it looks like Justin Pugh and DJ Fluker will be on the right side.
Why mess with success, right?
No point to doing that, especially when you solve the number one rushing defense. I mean, what else do you need to determine that you should stick with them moving forward?
Now, the Seahawks are a little banged up, too. Obviously, Cliff Avril, if you guys haven't heard, he has been put on injured reserve. His career might be over with that neck injury. I haven't heard the spinal stenosis diagnosis, but that's the type of thing it sounds like.
Where that neck injury
can cause the end of his career. It looks like Luke Jokel is probably not going to play. He is in practice yet this week with the knee injury.
Yeah.
Earl Thomas didn't practice yesterday. That was a personal matter. He'll be there. Now, that doesn't mean that the rest of the team is healthy. They have a bunch of guys that are banged up but did practice in full and are going to play, but it could affect how they play. Apparently, Michael Bennett's playing through a lot of pain with a heel injury. Jeremy Lane has a groin at corner that's been bothering him. And even Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman are on the injury list, though the injury is probably not as serious. C.J. Procise has also been battling an ankle injury on offense. So the Seahawks are not free of injuries on their own, Lance. And, of course, we all know Chris Carson has already been placed on IR this year, who had won their starting running back job. So they're battling some injuries, too.
Well, getting Procise back, I think, will help. He's been out. He's missed the last few games, so he hasn't even been able to suit up. He returned to practice this week following the bye. They've been rotating running backs, as you noted, because of Carson being out. Eddie Lacy,
Rawls,
Thomas Rawls.
McKenzie.
Correct.
Is the guy
so
from last
it's a
week.
Variety
McKissick,
of different players.
I'm sorry, right?
McKissick, yeah.
Yes.
That's the wide receiver slash running back that they've utilized. So I feel like they're probably going to showcase a few different players the way of the Giants and then maybe go with the hot hand. Seattle has not been able to establish the run consistently this season. If you look at their numbers, one game over 100, then they go back to 60. Then they're over 100, then they're to 90.
I was surprised, and I was actually looking at this morning. I was doing a little report for the radio network, and I expected to look at their rush ranking and see them somewhere around like 24 or 25. They're actually 15th in the league in rushing, which I was surprised to see based on their rotating running backs and the fact that they really haven't, like you said, been consistent.
Well, that's why they're an average running team. They're in the middle of the pack as a result of that because they've fluctuated so much with respect to their numbers. They have had a few games where they've been able to pound it, but then other games it's sort of been 2 yards a carry, grinding it out, 25 carries, but not getting much gain off of that. So, you know, this is the type of team, the last thing you want to allow them to do, given the fact that the Giants have been up and down. Remember, they're coming off their best rushing defense performance, too. We talked about how the Giants ran the ball effectively. Well, this was by far an impressive performance, held Denver to 46 yards. Now, can you prevent Seattle from having that breakout performance? Because, you know, Seattle is so dangerous, even if they don't run the football, because Russell Wilson can extend plays, John. If you then allow them to run the football, now you're pretty much putting them in an extremely comfort area.
And, you know, I'd have to look at the numbers. I'm not sure what they are, but I wonder where Seattle would rank in terms of their rushing if you took Russell Wilson's rushing yards out of the equation.
He's second on the team. He's number two on the team.
130-something yards, I think?
Yeah, I think he may even have more. I think he has around about 150.
Does he? Okay.
Yeah. So he's been by far, you can argue, their most effective runner.
So that's obviously
Carson's number one.
And that's not the traditional running game. So that's going to, therefore, you know, make that ranking probably a little bit better than it would be with Russell Wilson's rushing stats in the equation.
And the Giants have had, I understand, personnel changes, and there's only so much you can take away from a matchup in 2014 and 13 because
very little
teammates have changed. But Wilson's got a good track record against the Giants, no matter who's been on the field, of wreaking havoc because he can run and he can extend plays with his legs. 13 here at MetLife Stadium, he had 50 yards rushing on 8 carries, and then in 14, the game in Seattle, he had over 100 yards rushing, plus Marshawn Lynch ran for well over 104 touchdowns. So Seattle has been able to pound the football against most opponents, but specifically the Giants.
And look, the Giants will mix up their coverages, but they will play man, in my opinion, more than they play zone, which puts you into a bad position with a running quarterback because your defensive backs and your linebackers in coverage will often turn their backs to the quarterback, so you don't know if he's going to run, which means either you have to assign a spy to the quarterback in those situations or you instruct your defensive line, guys, look, you can't pin your ears back and go after this guy because it's going to create too many rushing lanes for him, and then he's going to run outside the pocket, either run for a first down or create extra time and throw on the move, which he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league on the move, throwing down the field in the league. So it'll be curious to see how the Giants adjust for that rushing quarterback based on how they play their coverages.
Oh, I think that's a great point. Plus, let's face it, John, Giants have not had a great track record this season slowing down mobile quarterbacks. Look at what Matthew Stafford did in terms of running for a few first downs. Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott. It's been a track record where players have found those lanes, those openings, as you alluded to, and a third and five, if they feel everybody's down the field, they'll take advantage of it. And Russell Wilson's not going to shy away from that.
And he already has a 23-yard touchdown run this year. He has two runs of over 20 yards, so he will go get that first down if he has to on a third down and run the football, which is a big part of it. Another thing I know you like to talk about all the time, so I'll cede the floor to you on this. Another good tight end coming into town with Jimmy Graham. And tight ends this year, I believe, have a touchdown in every game against the Giants.
7 touchdowns in 6 games because the Bucs, both tight ends scored. O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. Yeah, every single week I've tweeted out that the touchdown trend has continued. So until it stops, I'm not going to end that narrative. And Jimmy Graham, to me, and I understand that he's had some impressive numbers in the past, but this could be a breakout campaign for him specifically in Seattle.
For Seattle, right.
Yeah, I mean, clearly we know what he's done in New Orleans, but he's been relatively quiet since he arrived in Seattle. What I've noticed is the last 3 games, they've started to involve him a little bit more. He's been much more involved in terms of their red zone targets. He has 21 receptions, on the season. 17 of his receptions have come in the last 3 games combined. So they are making an emphasis to get him the ball a little bit more often when they're especially down the field. And I wouldn't surprise me if, given the fact that the Seahawks are looking at film and they're saying the Giants have had troubles with tight ends in the red zone, that they're probably going to look to get Graham involved there.
Yeah, and talking to Landon Collins, he'll be our radio interview on Sunday. He's one of the guys that's obviously going to have to deal with Jimmy Graham. Talk to me about how the Seahawks, and they'll do this with the running backs too, by the way, C.J. Procise, who's a former receiver now, a running back, and he will be their third down back in this game if he's able to go with that ankle injury. They like to try to isolate Jimmy Graham on safeties or linebackers in favorable matchups, then take advantage of it either in the short area or even get him down the field a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to get him one-on-one with the B.J. Goodson or if the Giants manage their defense well enough where they don't get caught in those mismatches. That'll be one of those little chess matches we see over the course of the game between the Seahawks offense and the Giants defense.
Well, and coverage down the field is extremely important in this game. We talk so much about containing Russell Wilson, John, but here's the thing. If Wilson extends a play, what does that mean? That means that the cover guys are going to have to stay with their respective opponents a little bit longer. So when you take into consideration, Paul Richardson and Tyler Lockett are their two vertical threats.
They're speed guys.
Doug Baldwin is their slot guy. He's their most highly targeted player, with the exception of Jimmy Graham. That means that this, to me, is a huge game on the likes of Landon Collins and the secondary, because if Wilson's able to get out of the pocket, he'll buy time, and that means that just when you think that the player you're defending is out of the play, all he has to do is run a little bit more around to get to the opposite side of the field, and he could be in position to convert a first down.
And it's funny, Landon Collins made this point in the interview that you hear again on our pregame show on WFAN on Sunday. He has a bit of a tell as to when he's going to run and when he's going to throw. Usually when the pressure breaks down and he runs through the defensive line because they don't keep their little wall up and he can run straight ahead, he'll run. He doesn't often run, step up in the pocket through the defensive line and then throw. He'll usually run in those situations. And you can tell when he tucks it when he's going to run. But when he gets outside the pocket, that's when he likes to throw the football, especially down the field. There was a play that you'll see on Giants first and 10, Carl Banks and strategy, that I found. I believe he was playing against the Indianapolis Colts. He got rushed,
blowout game.
Rolled out to his left. And, you know, when a righty quarterback's rolling out to his left, he's got to turn his whole body back to throw. And he does it, and he gets the ball 35 yards down the field on a line to Paul Richardson for a huge gain. And those are the things that the Giants defense have to worry about, because he's so accurate on the move, he's so accurate down the field, and when he extends plays, it requires a lot of discipline. And I think this is also a big game in the same way, Lance, for Eli Apple, who's had some issues this year falling behind in coverage, and when he tries to recover, he doesn't get his head around, and he'll sometimes create pass interference penalties. Russell Wilson will put you in those situations to chase on those scramble plays. So that's the type of discipline you're going to need from this Giants secondary, especially without one of their star defensive ends, Olivier Vernon. The Giants' number three defensive end, Romeo Okwara, is now on injured reserve. Maybe he'll be back before the end of the year if he gets designated to return. We'll see. So you're going to have a lot of young guys out there like Avery Moss,
yeah,
Cap Cappy, you know, Kerry Wynn, third year. You trust him. He knows what he's doing. He's a smart player. But these guys are going to have to be very disciplined and make sure, and Steve Spagnuolo does a good job of coaching, as we've seen this in years past, of creating that pocket around Wilson rather than just coming right at him and creating gaps.
Well, this is a defense, though, that has had so many movable parts over the last few weeks because players have been in and out of the lineup, and now that you're infusing youth, you have to make sure that everybody is well aware of their assignments. I think it's also a big game for B.J. Goodson to make sure everybody's
sure
lined up. So, like you said, they can contain the pocket. And as I mentioned, you can continue to emphasize it, the discipline that the members of the secondary are going to have to show is so big. Because, you know, Eli Apple, if he does start to look down the field at his defender and he thinks that he's completely out of the play, all of a sudden Russell Wilson's running to the opposite side. Paul Richardson or Tyler Lockett see that. They continue to run. You can't start to tackle a guy as he's running down the field. That's when all of a sudden Seattle's going to capitalize and get favorable field position. And you just don't want to give a team gifts that has been pretty effective in terms of when it at least has had some red zone opportunities this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the one place, by the way, the Seahawks have struggled this year is in the red zone. They're ranked 30th in the NFL in terms of red zone offense. Conversely, they're the best red zone defense in the NFL. The Giants have been okay in both. They're 10th defensively, 16th offensively in terms of the red zone. So that'll be another big thing this week. Can the Giants keep Seattle out of the end zone when they get inside the 20? But like you said, Seattle also likes to score on big plays. So
yeah, they're an explosive team. So, I mean, one way or another, you have to be alert of what exactly Seattle is going to do. But I'm glad you brought up the red zone, because if you go back to the Denver game, what I think gets overlooked in that contest, John, is Denver had four opportunities in the red zone. It's not as if the Broncos weren't able to move the football.
I made this point yesterday, too.
They did not punch it in. But that was the biggest difference to me in the game. I mean, a lot of people talk about stopping the run, getting Denver off the field on third down. But
stopping the run was very important.
It was important.
And running the football.
But the Broncos were knocking on the door a few times, and they either coughed up the football, you know, couldn't get through on the goal line stand, but it wasn't because they did not have the opportunities. They had them. The Giants' defense just at least came to play and was consistent throughout the contest.
Well, that's why I think, and we'll get to your calls in a second at 201-939-4513, Lance, I think that's why when people said, and oftentimes we'll try to, you know, swat down some of those false narratives out there, but That defense did look like the defense from last year in that game on Sunday night because they stopped the run, which was the best thing the defense did last year. They were great in the red zone, what the defense was great at last year, and they took the ball away. Something else the defense was great at last year. So it really did look like the defense from last year against the Broncos, and really it was a huge reason why they won the ball game.
Well, and you also did not have the mental mistakes, the missed tackles that we saw in the early stages of this season, and you really didn't see a lot of that in 2016. So it was the perfect microcosm of what 16 was all about. Now the question is moving forward, because I always say sample size is important to look at. Was this a tease performance against Denver, John? Or is this a sign of what's yet to come? And that remains to be seen. And it's not trying to not get excited over what we saw on last Sunday, but, you know, we haven't seen that consistently going back to the first five games of the season.
Well, the last 2 weeks has been better.
Improvement.
Yes.
But I'm talking about what I saw in Denver was I also saw a complete game with the three facets of the team, too.
Right. And they also, by the way,
which is not something that we had seen.
And they also, by the way, ran the ball against an eight-man box. It's not like the Broncos are playing two safeties deep and they were daring the Giants to run. The Broncos had eight guys in the box and the Giants ran it anyway. So if you can do that consistently, that's a whole game changer right there. So you're right. I think it'll be a good test this week to see if you can repeat it. Anybody can do something once, it's being able to repeat it that truly makes you good. I had a bunch of people all over me for when I said Adrian Peterson might have been washed up a couple weeks ago on a Friday, and then he had that big game last week. People were all over me.
Well,
all over me.
But then again, listen, and I'm not one to jump to your rescue and defend you left and right.
Trust
but
me,
in
I know.
In fairness, it is one game.
And that was the point I made.
If he doesn't run for 130 yards moving forward, which is very possible, then we're just going to overreact over one performance.
And that's the point that I made. I said, guys, look, anybody can do it once. Let's see if he can do it again. And if I'm wrong, I'm happy to admit it. I'll say I'm wrong. And I have nothing against Adrian Peterson. Good for him if he's able to continue his career. I have no beef with the guy. It's fine.
The one thing I think bodes well for Adrian Peterson is clearly he's going to get the opportunity.
He will get a lot of carries.
He's going to get at-bats. It's the old story. You need at-bats. New Orleans was not giving him the at-bats because of Kamara and Ingram. Now he's going to get the at-bats. Whether or not he could turn those at-bats into positive yardage remains to be seen, but I think at least the positive for him is the opportunity will be there.
And look out for the Saints, by the way. I think they could be a sleeper team here the last 8 or 9, 10 games of the year. I think their defense, while not great, it's better.
Well, they're certainly not going to score 3 touchdowns every single game. That's what the defense did.
That is true.
Against the Lions.
So I think the Saints are a little bit more of a balanced team. Anyway, not to digress, so we'll get to your calls at 201-939-4513. Mark Anthony joins us first from New York. Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I just had something to say real quick. I'll just get off the air after.
Sure.
It's about the O-line, about the jumbo package. And I was, like, going through this for, like, I don't know, maybe a week or two. And I just wanted to pass to you and get your opinion on it. I was curious if we could, the same O-line that we have right now without Richburg at center, put him at a tight end. And then the next man next to him would be Rhett Ellison. And then probably have I'm just spitballing. I was thinking about having Ingram as an outside wide receiver, even though he's a tight end, because it's pretty much running or fade kind of scenario because we're in goal line.
Oh, okay.
And then you could isolate one wide receiver on the outside, and that's 9 people right there. And then the 10 and 11, of course, is the quarterback and the running back in the backfield. It's kind of like one of the little sneaky plays that I was getting from Dallas when they ran all the big people and had one man in the backfield with the quarterback. And I'll take your answer off the air.
Well, Mark, hold on 1 second. But I want to ask you one follow-up. Do you mean you can use this package anywhere? Or are you talking exclusively in goal line situations? Okay, got it. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to run that out there on the goal line and you know, try to either get Ingram on a back shoulder fade or something and isolate him on a linebacker and have a jumbo unbalanced line in goal line situations, I'm fine running that out there. Sure, why not?
The other thing I was going to throw out is instead of Richburg, I mean, I think you could throw out Bobby Hart as the swing offensive lineman there or the extra tight end.
He's probably more comfortable in space.
Yeah, than throwing out a center slash guard. Normally you turn to an extra tackle in those circumstances.
If you really want to get big, you could put both those guys out there with Ingram as your lone wide receiver.
Yeah, you don't have to have Rhett Ellison.
Right.
You have 2 extra offensive linemen. The good news is you get creative because you have some depth once the offensive line gets back to full health.
The seldom used 14 personnel. 1 running back and 4 tight ends.
Well, this is what happens when
you don't see that very
mathematics
often.
Come into play. Yes, you get a little bit too creative because you overthink things. But they certainly have the personnel. The bigger point is they have the personnel in play to at least throw those formations out there. Whether or not the execution is there, you know, that's a big question mark. But I think they could certainly toy with that once they get guys back.
201-939-4513. Lloyd's in Philly. What's going on, Lloyd? How are you, buddy?
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to follow up with a phone call that I made to you guys, I think, after week three.
Sure, go ahead.
I was pretty much calling up to, I don't know, I gave you my version of what I thought the Giants should do with the personnel that they had as far as having a running game.
Okay.
Implementing it. And we actually did it in the Chargers game, and we didn't stick with it. And I was a little upset by that.
Can you be specific as to what personnel you're talking about for me?
Well, having a blocking tight end, it would have been nice if we used a blocking fullback. But regardless, having a two tight end formation or run specifically what I said was running out of the strong formation, I formation, pro formation. So that way we had a, somebody in the backfield besides the running back. Now, that's not exactly what they did. I saw a lot of Rhett Ellison over on the right in line, and I saw a running back over on the left.
Correct.
And they ran it that way, and it was working. They did it. They stuck with it in the Denver game. They didn't stick with it in the Charger game.
I agree with that.
So basically, we had this, we had the personnel, and we had the ability to do it the whole time, and Ben McAdoo dropped the ball. For the first 5 weeks, he wasn't committed to it, and I put the losses that we have on him.
Well, but Lloyd, remember this. If the Giants would have had the type of success they had against the Broncos in some of those other earlier games, who's to say whether Ben McAdoo would have stuck to it or not?
Yeah, but they didn't use that formation. They didn't use the personnel the way they should have.
I mean, but Lloyd, they had 12 personnel on the field enough to get a feel if they could run the ball with that group. I mean, they averaged 1.5 yards per carry and I think 2 yards per carry the first two games of the year. If you want to talk about different personnel on the offensive line, and maybe if Fluker was in there earlier or Brett Jones was in there earlier, we can have that conversation. But I don't think it's fair to say the reason the running game didn't. And remember, you said you wanted the fullback. You actually had Shane Smith in the first game playing half a dozen, eight snaps in that game, something like that. I don't remember.
But
you actually did get your fullback in that first game more than you got in any other game, and they couldn't run the ball at all against Dallas.
Well, and Ellison was used as a fullback, and he missed the block on Sean Lee, I remember, in week one against the Dallas Cowboys.
Went right past him.
Yeah, the execution wasn't there. They utilized that personnel. And the other thing I was going to mention here, Lloyd, let's not overlook the fact that against the Eagles and the Bucs, you're down 14-0 and 13-0 respectively. It's not a game in terms of flow that played out where they could all of a sudden sit back and run the football and milk the clock. So you have to take that into consideration, too. Some of these games, they were trailing early, and you got to throw out maybe what the initial game plan was as well.
Right, but on third and short, instead of running the ball, they set up in a pass formation, and they were throwing it on short, and he was going for it on fourth down instead of taking the points when he had it. So I don't have anybody else to point to except him.
Okay.
Well, listen, you're entitled to your opinion, but I think a lot of it also goes to the lack of execution
Lloyd,
for the players
as well. I will say this. The offensive line has blocked so much better these past 2 weeks than they did the first 3 or 4 weeks of the year. It's night and day. I have conversations with Shona Howard and David Deal every day, and they've said to me that the line has simply blocked much better the last 2 weeks than they did earlier in the season.
Okay. One other thing, and this is just going forward for the Seattle game, it's not like Ben McAdoo is going to listen to me, or even if he did.
Or us.
He's not in control. He's not going to control the defense. But I think the best defensive scheme to slow down what the Seattle Seahawks do best is probably zone blitz, and zone blitz from every position. I don't know if we'll see it or not, but if we do, I think we'll come away with a win, and we got to stay committed to the run. And that's all I had.
Thank you, Lloyd. Appreciate the call, buddy.
I appreciate the call.
The one thing I'd worry about with the zone blitz is that if you drop that defensive lineman into that short coverage, is that the guy that you want tracking Russell Wilson around? Because if you bring linebackers and drop defensive linemen, you're going to have a less athletic guy in the middle of the field if Russell Wilson decides to scramble. I'm not sure if that's what you're looking for. Now, you can try to fool the Seahawks offensive line with that. They've had some moving pieces. They've had some issues. Maybe the zone blitz creates some confusion. You get to the quarterback, and then you create some turnovers or whatever. I get that part of it. But once he starts to move, I'd much rather have a safety or a linebacker trying to keep Russell Wilson from running for 20 yards than Dalvin Tomlinson or Kerry Wynn. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you're going to get some favorable matchups down the field for the Seahawks if Wilson gets rid of the football, and now right. All of a sudden the wide receivers are going up against defensive linemen. I don't necessarily think that favors the Giants. I do agree, though, that pressuring, which Spags has done throughout the course of this season.
He's actually blitzed a lot this year.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to change. I do think testing the Seattle Seahawks offensive line early is well worth it.
Absolutely.
They have had some movable parts. Luke Jokel, their starting left guard, we talked about. He's out 4 to 5 weeks because of knee surgery that he had during the bye week. The good news for Seattle is, you know, they do have a veteran who they're expected to move in there. Mark Lewinsky started at right guard the first two games of the season. The anticipation is they're going to move him into left.
He didn't exactly play well.
No,
the first
he didn't. That's the reason why he lost his job. But right. My point is, it's better to go with him than necessarily right. A rookie or a guy that you just boosted up from the practice squad, even though they also may give opportunities to Ethan Posick, who's one of their rookies from this year's class, who's extremely versatile because he played a lot
Ohio
of different positions.
State?
LSU.
LSU.
Played
okay.
center,
I remember
guard,
we did an,
tackle.
I remember we did an interview, and I guess it was LSU. I thought it was Ohio State, and they had really good things to say about him. They said he was a really smart guy and yep. Could play a bunch of different positions. So I agree. I would not be surprised if we see him. And honestly, Lance, their strongest offensive linemen are in the center of the field. Justin Britt's probably their best lineman. Their two tackles, Jermaine Ifedi and Ross Odhiambo. Did I get
Odhiambo.
Odhiambo. I was close. They struggle a little bit trying to block ends. So we'll see if the Giants can take advantage of that like JPP did last week, getting around Metallic Watson.
Yeah, and then their other guard is Ode Abushi, who was playing for the Jets at one point. He was just added in free agency. So, you know, it's not a star-studded offensive line, as you noted. They've had some pressure. They've given up 13 sacks. So that's tied for 14th fewest. Not a horrendous number, but there's been some games where they've had to take their fair share of tackles in the backfield.
According to this, it is Odhiambo, by the way, not Odhiambo.
The
flip card says Odhiambo.
Well, listen, I am not going to throw anybody under the bus within the organization.
Oh,
but
please do so.
No, I have seen some mistakes on those cards before.
Tino?
I will leave it at that.
Are you killing Dion?
Yeah, I am, because there have been some mistakes on those cards.
Deion Dargan, so, Lance Meadows killing you, bro.
Well, all I'm going to say is I would not go by that as being 100%.
Don't
certain.
The Seahawks provide these pronunciations to him, though?
I
don't think he does it
so
on his
sure
own.
I'm sure about that.
Now, I know he does the Giants pronunciations, but I actually help with the Giants pronunciations sometimes. But
okay.
The Seahawks,
well, that would
I don't
explain
know
why some of the Giants pronunciations have been wrong.
That's
then,
incorrect.
The been some fine. Of them. Some of them have been wrong in the past. That's all I'm going to say. I haven't looked
you
carefully
are
at these.
You such a stickler.
Listen, I pride myself in making sure that
we
don't butcher
well,
names.
Apparently you
I
have this name incorrect
well,
because it's Odhiambo, according to the Seahawks.
But according to what
football.
I have seen.
Now, where have you seen this?
I went to the draft breakdown of his pronunciation and listened to an interview with his pronunciation. Because I always
did
I don't
he
trust,
say his own name or
I don't,
did somebody else
no,
say his
somebody
name?
Said it, yes.
Okay, well,
but normally,
that wasn't right.
Well, normally, if you're sitting next to a person and they butcher your name, maybe out of respect to that person, you wouldn't interrupt them, but I think at some point you'd maybe throw in a little joke of some sort that they did butcher your name.
John Schmilk, Lance Meow with you, 201-939-4513.
Yes.
Let's go to Aaron in Rochester. Aaron, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Hey, John, Lance, how's it going, guys?
Doing great, Aaron. How are you?
I'm all right. I want to just touch on one thing. I know I'm probably late. Because you know, I wasn't listening yesterday or whatever,
that's okay.
But I want to give Dominic Rogers-Cromartie a big kudos, man, for stepping up, taking ownership for whatever went down and moving on by it. I felt like that was a good move on his behalf, and I know he's a good stand-up dude anyway, but I want to give him kudos on that. And the other question I had was when Rich Bird come back, that's his spot, right? So he'd get that center spot back. Right?
I mean,
you would have to fight for that position back.
I don't think Ben McAdoo has said either way how they're going to handle when he gets back. So I'm hesitant to say. Usually, a guy like Richburg, who's a good player, will get his job back. But if the Giants go out and rush for 180 yards again this week, and you know, Brett Jones is moving people, they try to figure out a way to get him on the field. I don't know if that means maybe one of them at guard or Richburg back at center or how they would handle it. The Giants haven't said how they'd handle it, but I do wonder how hesitant they would be in taking Brett Jones off the field if the team continues to have the success with this current offensive line configuration. But I don't know.
Well, I'll give you an example from last season, Aaron, and correct me if I'm wrong, John. When Marshall Newhouse got hurt, Bobby Hart took over for him. When Newhouse came back, he didn't automatically reclaim his spot.
That's correct.
So there have been some instances where the Giants have said, you know what, the guy who replaced the initial starter is performing well, we're going to leave it as is. It would not surprise me if maybe they get to that. The good news is they're going to have the bye week to self-scout and determine what they want to do moving forward. And I think this is also good because it gives more of an opportunity for Weston Richburg to get back to full health and recovery from a lingering concussion. Yes, you're noticing the pronunciation, according to NFL.com, by the way. I'm sorry, Aaron. We'll get back to the topic at hand. But just wanted to make sure John was aware that this card is not necessarily always very reliable. But anyway, thanks for the phone call, Aaron. Appreciate it. What'd I tell you?
Oh, that doesn't mean NFL.com's right.
Well, all I'm going to say is I have full confidence in the league.
Okay.
At least putting something forward here that is reliable.
By the way, folks, I know I've gotten some complaints on Twitter that people try to call in and you can't get through. We have a couple open lines now, so if you want to get in on the show, now's the time. 201-939-4513. Travis in Queens is up next. Travis, you want to talk about DJ Fluker? You probably should have called when Dottino was on. You guys going to have a little, like, you know, like very intimate one-on-one to share your love of DJ Fluker.
Yeah, right. I should have. But, I want to just allude to the fact that you made about, you know, the last two games. And part of it is, you know, DJ Fluker. But the scary thing about it all is I feel as though all this is by default, you know, due to the injury, you know, and, like, McAdoo, like, he didn't take full advantage, you know, to see – the best five to go with. Because, you know, that's what he was saying, I believe, for the start of the season. You know, like, I'm going to go with the best five.
Yeah, but Travis, here's the thing. And I made this point to a caller the other day. DJ Fluker had every opportunity in the world from April to August to show this coaching staff he deserved to be a starter. He did not show them enough to get into the starting lineup. And frankly, for most of the summer, I don't even think he was close to showing them he was ready to be a starter and start over some of the guys in the lineup. Remember, when at the end of the preseason, when they were rotating guys in and out of guard, who were getting it was Brett Jones that was ahead of him getting the starting guard instead of John Jerry, not DJ Fluker.
Yeah. Well, this is what I'm going to add, and I'll let you continue, Travis, because I've had conversations. I'm going to use another team as an example. The Vikings drafted Laquon Treadwell, if you recall, a few years ago in the first round. Barely played last season. Couldn't get on the field. He just came off by far his most productive game because Stephon Diggs
was inactive. A nice one-handed catch in that
correct.
Game, too, by
the way. So I had on another program, somebody called up and said, why didn't the Vikings play Laquon Treadwell prior to this? Why did they wait, you know, for Diggs to get hurt? So I said, what you have to understand is, and this relates to Fluker, we don't know what's going on in practice on a daily basis, especially once the regular season starts, when we're not out there like in training camp. So we don't know what the coaching staff is seeing in terms of effort, in terms of execution.
Well, I don't think effort's ever a question for Fluker.
I'm just using it in a generic sense. Mm-hmm. I wasn't trying to point out that Fluker is not throwing effort. I'm just making a generic statement about all players in practice. These are the things that happen on a daily basis. And if we don't have the microscope on these players during practice – and it's only the coaching staff is going to be making these decisions on who's up and who's down based on what they're seeing on a daily basis. And if they're not seeing it in practice, that's a big reason why they're not going to give the opportunities to these guys during the course of the regular season and games.
And Travis, real quick, Ben McAdoo was actually asked today by one of the reporters at his press conference whether or not he regrets not playing Fluker sooner. And his answer to the reporter was, I think we've brought him along at exactly the right pace. So go ahead now. I'm sorry.
No, that's good information. So basically, in all essence, he's saying, you know, like you said, because it's hard being a fan to trust, like, coaches sometimes because, you know, me and my father always, like, go back and forth. His point is the coaches know what they're doing, you know. So that's basically what you're saying in essence, like, basically, like, trust that they see what we don't see.
Well, I think given their greater knowledge in terms of what they're coaching and talking about, I think – when in doubt, that's what you have to do. Now, does it always work out that way? No. And I want to throw out another thing, too. You know, it isn't all positives either with Fluker. Yeah, the running game has been a lot better, and he's been really physical. But if you want to go back and pinpoint the play that forced the Giants to lose the game to the San Diego Chargers, Do you know who missed a block on a twist and a stunt that made Eli Manning get sacked and fumble the football? DJ Fluker.
Right.
So you don't see those weaknesses as much when Eli Manning's only dropping back to pass 22 times in a game, right, and he's doing 2- and 3-step drops because the Giants have the lead.
Yeah.
So I think the circumstance of the game helps make Fluker's play style shine in a way it wouldn't if the Giants were, say, playing from behind.
This was the first game they played with the lead from start to finish. So that should tell you a lot. And that's a big reason why they were able to run the ball for the first time over 30 times in a game.
Can I ask you guys this, too?
Sure.
Do you think, like McAdoo, like he suffers with the situation of, you know, if you go 11 personnel versus two wide receivers and two tight ends, that, you know, before the injuries with the wide receivers, is that you leave, like, a playmaker like Sterling Shepard out? Do you think that's why, especially, like, you know, like last year?
Yes.
That's right?
I think so, yeah.
I think that played into it because I also think that you got to look at the makeup of the offensive personnel on the roster
last year. You want to put your best players on the field.
Compared to this year.
Right.
And why take off Odell Beckham, Sterling Shepard, Victor Cruz if the option's on the bench?
Or Will Tye, Jarrell Adams, and whoever else they had on the tight end roster last year.
Yeah.
Jarrell Adams, whoever.
So
Larry Donnell.
Yeah, I think that definitely played into the rationale. I think this year when you have Red Ellison, who's a little bit more versatile, the running backs have been a bit more productive, guys are healthier, I think that possibly changes the philosophy or the willingness to say, you know what, we could take Shepard off the field for a play or two. It may not hurt us because we like what we see on the bench.
Can I ask one more?
Sure.
I'm getting a lot of do you guys think, like, going forward with Sterling Shepard returning, once he returns, like, to full health, that they may determine how he does on the outside? Because he would be going to the outside, no? Or you guys think he stays slot?
Travis, you're asking the same questions the media is asking at the press conferences, because a reporter asked that exact same question to Ben McAdoo today, and he said that Shepard can be used both inside and outside. Thanks a lot for the call, bud. We appreciate it. Because he can do both. And I guess the Giants will have to decide of Roger Lewis, Tavarus King, and Travis Rudolph. Depending on who's on the field, that'll determine where Shepard goes. If it's Lewis and King, they'll be outside. Shepard will be in the slot. If they want Rudolph in the game, I imagine he'll probably be the slot wide receiver, and then Shepard would go outside.
Yeah, I mean, you got to play to the strengths of your personnel and where the experience is. I think, though, Roger Lewis and Tavarus King, and I think this goes back to last season, it's fairly well documented that the two of them are probably best suited for the outside. And as you mentioned, John, I think Shepard and Rudolph a little bit more interchangeable. Also, you want to give opportunities to Evan Engram in the slot. You don't want to take those away, because the more you move him around, I think it keeps the defense on its toes. The one thing I noticed from yesterday, just to use the Raiders-Chiefs game, I'm surprised we haven't even brought it up given how wacky an ending it was, but I thought the Raiders did a nice job moving Amari Cooper around last night.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is a big reason why he had his breakout game this season for the first time, because they didn't necessarily say, we're just going to leave him on this side of the field. And that kept Kansas City from guessing to determine where exactly he's going to wind up over the course of the field.
And we'll get to the remaining calls, but I do want to bring up something on that game last night. I know fans like to criticize the officials and get after them a little bit.
When do they not?
I thought they did a wonderful job at the end of that game. They got every call right, and I think the game ended exactly the way it was supposed to end.
I agree. The 10-second runoff was perfectly executed. Throwing the flags, giving them new opportunities, the way they handled the Jared Cook play, I thought also was very fair. I didn't have a major issue. I know there were some calls throughout the course of the game, but you know what? There's calls in every single game that I could point to that could easily go either.
And the offensive pass interference I thought was a good call. Once you see the guy, I know people say, oh, Des Bryant does that on every play. I got a couple tweets about that. If you nudge and push with your arms kind of bent like this or even like inside, it's okay. Once Crabtree does this, the arms extend and the defender falls down, that's the easiest flag ever for an official to throw. It's an easy, easy call. And a question I got on line two was, why wasn't there a 10-second runoff on the offensive pass interference penalty? It's because you only get those runoffs generally. There's a longer list, but I'll try to summarize it. It's primarily dead ball penalties that you'll get the 10-second runoff on, because think of it this way. If you're committing an offensive pass interference call in the course of a play, you're not saving yourself any time.
No, because especially if the ball's incomplete, the clock is stopping anyway.
Correct. And if the ball is complete, guess what? The play's not going to count. You're going to get backed up 10 yards, and you're going to lose the time it took to execute the play anyway. The reason things like, you know, delay of games or false starts or things like that or penalize the 10-second runoff is that you use those to try to get the clock stopped quicker than if you would run a play, and that's why you get the 10-second runoff with those penalties.
Now, to just add further clarification, I don't know if you remember the Lions-Falcons game, something similar happened with Golden Tate. The difference was the Lions did not have a timeout left, and there was less than 10 seconds left. So that's why the Lions didn't have another opportunity. Right. This was different.
There was 16 seconds to go.
There was more than 10 seconds left, so they could survive.
Actually,
the 18
seconds, pardon me.
Yeah, they could survive the 10-second runoff. That's why 8 seconds were put on the clock. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference between, because I'm sure a lot of people are like, well, why didn't the Lions get an opportunity? The clock and the timeouts left plays a big role in this, too.
And there's really no way to do it other than have the runoff, unless you want to literally put all the players back where they were on the previous play and go and see how quickly they can get up to the line
of
scrimmage.
Can they line it up? Yeah.
But you aren't going to do that. So I thought the game was officiated. I thought it was officiated wonderfully at the end. I just want to give credit to the officials where it's due. Yeah. By the way, I don't blame the Chiefs. I don't blame the Chiefs for committing those two, I think, two defensive holdings or one interference,
one holding.
Two holdings, right?
Yeah.
Because in that situation, if you think you're about to get beat, you should hold or commit pass interference because the other team doesn't gain any yardage.
Yeah,
they'll get a free play out of it. But if you think you're beat, fine. Just reset the play and do it again. And you also hope that the referees get a little gunshine the last play of the game from throwing the flag. So if I'm a defensive player in that spot and it's the last play of the game, I am overly aggressive on the defensive side in the secondary, not letting anybody get open. By the way, I point this out too. I thought a few plays earlier, the Chiefs got away with the pass interference penalty. I think they were trying to throw it to either Cook or one of the other wide receivers on a corner fade, and the Chiefs player kind of wrapped him up around the legs before the ball got there as he was falling out of bounds. I thought they actually missed the DPI on that one. Anyway.
Well, one of the ones that I believe a penalty was called, and correct me if I'm wrong, there were so many penalties, the one that Derek Carr overthrew Jared Cook.
That's when they were kind of battling together. Yeah.
There was a penalty on that.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
Now, that was one that maybe the Chiefs shouldn't have had the philosophy of thinking they were going to be beat because that was an incomplete pass.
Well, that was
even
also,
even if they were beat under the circumstances.
I agree. That hold happened way early in the play before it looked like the guy was going to get beat. I agree with you. I thought the guy held unnecessarily there, especially since he had a linebacker underneath him, and that's why Carr airmailed that pass.
Because he wanted
to
avoid the linebacker.
Over the head of the linebacker that was standing in front of Cook. So, no, I agree. I thought that was a little
that
bit...
That was the one
that was
I
probably a little bit too aggressive.
Yeah.
I agree. Let's go to... I'm trying to figure out who was on here first. I think it was Dennis in the Meadowlands. We'll go to him. What's up, Dennis?
Hey, how's it going there? Can you hear me?
Well, loud and clear, Dennis. What's up?
Hey, you were just talking about with Fluker and how the offensive line, like sometimes how he had from April to June to, you know, solidify his position on the thing. But, you know, a lot of times practice players, some people practice really well, and then when it comes to games, they stink. And then you have people who
– the opposite.
Who, you know, vice versa.
Yeah, but Dennis, my argument against that would be he played in 4 preseason games.
Yeah, but preseason doesn't matter. And sometimes because there's, you know, you run into some. Let's put it this way: you'll have some guys that in preseason shine like crazy, and you know, we had guys like Deion and other players that we had that shine really good in preseason, and then we got to regular season, couldn't do anything.
No, Dennis, I hear you, but if you're a coach and you're looking at two guys, one guy outplays the other guy in practice, one guy outplays the other guy in preseason games, and the one guy gets outplayed in both situations, why would you ever play the guy that's playing worse than the other guy in both practice and preseason games?
Oh, I agree.
I'm saying
it's a proven science behind it. What I'm saying is that sometimes you can't tell by practices and or preseason game.
No, that's true. I agree with that. That's
regular
fair.
Regular season game, they say it's so much faster. than preseason and for practice sometimes. It really depends on who's practicing and what you're looking at. And then you also have to put in the equation the scouting teams. You know, these guys get a lot of money to scout players and stuff like that. For them to be wrong on a draft pick, you know, you know what I mean.
Yeah, but Dennis, and here's another thing, too, I want to throw out there. The Giants played a completely different type of game against the Broncos because their personnel dictated it because of all the injuries at wide receiver, right? So now we'll see if Sterling Shepard gets back this week. Let's see now how other teams, now that they have a full game on tape with how the new Giants want to play, will they make an adjustment to how the Giants played against the Broncos and it'll be different this week? I don't know the answer to that. We'll have to wait and see.
I agree. You also have to look at, you know, you have a different play caller. You also have to look at, you know,
that's
you don't have
too.
Those stars that you would have to game plan around. You
yep.
don't know exactly what these other guys are going to do.
That's true.
So there's a lot of equations in there, too.
Absolutely. You know? Agree 100%.
Anyway, have a great day, guys.
Hey, you too, Dennis. Good call. Yeah. I think you make a good call. And look, you're right. Sometimes a guy does do poorly in practice and poorly in preseason games. He ends up being really good. I think that's a really tiny percentage. I don't think that happens often. Is it possible? Sure, but I mean, if you're a coach and one guy is better than the other one in every situation, why are you going to play
the guy that's
worse?
Yeah, you're not going to go with the guy that's finishing
second. I'm going with my gut here, folks.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that there are players that have had standout preseasons and then it doesn't necessarily translate to the regular season. But you know what? I'll think of a player here that had a standout preseason and then didn't get opportunities during the regular season. And the reason why was because he wasn't showing it consistently on the practice field.
Corey Washington.
No, I was going to throw out Adewale Ojomo.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
Adewale Ojomo had a very good preseason, if you recall, John. Made the team. And then everybody was wondering, well, why doesn't Adewale Ojomo get on the field during the regular season? Well, part of it had to do with they weren't seeing it during the course of practice.
Right. And same thing with Corey Washington. Same
Corey Washington, yeah. So, I mean, you have examples of practice does mean something. It's not something that you should just throw away, and the coaches are not going to dismiss it and say to themselves, oh, well, I remember 5 years ago when I was on this staff, we had this guy that liked to just sit on the bench for 5 hours during practice.
And eat cookies.
Yeah, but then all of a sudden had 200 yards receiving. They're not going to take that for granted.
I will neither confirm or deny there was a player here that once ate cookies on the sidelines. Let's go to Jason in Maine. How are you, Jason?
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up,
Jay? Well, Jason, what do you got?
Well, I was going to ask you about Sterling Shepard, but you guys answered that about 10 minutes ago. So
okay. What else you got?
I had to think of some other things. One of the things I was curious about is Rhett Ellison. I didn't hear his name at all in the last game, and I'm just wondering, is that because he was covered so well, or did they not have a lot of plays designed for him? Was he put in a lot of blocking positions? Why do we not hear much from him last week?
Good question. I do believe he was put in a lot of blocking positions. I'm going to take a look at his snap count right now to tell you exactly how many snaps he played. But I know he was on the field a lot because the Giants did play 12 personnel more than 60% of the time.
Yeah.
So he certainly was on the field a lot. And I got to admit, Jason, it's a really good question. I have not looked at the tape specifically as to how they used Ellison. I'm not sure I'll have the time to do that, maybe during the bye week. But over the course of the game, here's his play time percentage. Ellison was on the field for, where's his name? How am I missing him there? There he is. Thank you. He was on the field for 35 snaps, which was 65%, only three fewer snaps than Evan Engram, who was at 38 snaps and 70%. So he was on the field an awful lot during the game.
Yeah, he was used as a blocker on a number of running plays that I recall.
And he chipped in pass protection, too.
Yeah, and keep in mind, if he and Engram are on the field at the same time, look at the targets for Engram. There's a big reason why Ellison didn't really walk away with a number of receptions himself in terms of the receiving game. I think they're going to go with the guy who's the stronger blocker, who is Ellison, to help in the running game and then let Engram run routes.
And by the way, Jason, just an addendum to that, Jarrell Adams played 11 offensive snaps and Matt LaCosse played 9 offensive snaps. So if you put all those together for the tight ends, you're looking at almost 80% playtime percentage in terms of both tight ends on the field at the same time.
And Adams had one catch, and Matt LaCosse, if memory serves me correct, had a target, but he dropped it.
Correct.
So those two were targeted, but also minimal. And granted, they didn't play nearly as many snaps as Rhett Ellison. But that's a positive, because we were talking about all offseason, people wanted to see Rhett Ellison on the field, involved in the blocking game, used as a fullback slash tight end, because that was his M.O. going back to when he blocked for Adrian Peterson with the Vikings.
Okay. That's fine.
So I don't see any issue with the fact that he wasn't heavily targeted as a receiver. I think it's actually a positive development that they did showcase him in the blocking scheme.
Okay. Just one other question for you. My biggest concern in this game is Russell Wilson drives me crazy. He just he runs all over the field all the time.
Absolutely.
So I'm wondering what with our personnel, the guys that we have, you guys are probably familiar with their speeds and skills. What do you think Spagnuolo will do to try and try and limit him, try and contain him, so he doesn't have these moments where he runs out and gives receivers all kinds of time to get open? And I'll leave you with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jason. Bye, Jason. And I'll actually reference one of our Twitter followers, Big-07088. And he said a three safety look might be a good look this week. Definitely need a quarterback spy in Russell. I'm not sure if you spy him necessarily, but we did see three safety. We saw Thompson, Adams, and Collins on the field at times last week, and I would not be surprised if we see that at times again this week, especially with the fact that the Seahawks will also sometimes use two tight ends and things like that too.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Andrew Adams has had plenty of experience going back to last season, and Darian Thompson, who's coming off by far probably one of his most impressive games, that was good to see, but there's no reason why Adams shouldn't get opportunities. And I also think a lot of it falls on what you and I were talking about earlier, John, the linebackers, and assigning them to help keep Russell Wilson in check. Keenan Robinson, I thought, is also coming off his most impressive game. I thought he did a really good job in coverage last week, and you want him probably more down the field than watching Russell Wilson, but some of these other linebackers, like a Devon Kennard, a B.J. Goodson, I think they're going to play perhaps some big roles against the Seahawks this week.
201-939-4513. We got two more calls. Let's get him in. We'll go to Haas in New Jersey. He's up next. What's up, Haas?
How you doing, fellas?
What up, buddy?
All right, nice to talk to you. I called in the last time, and I talked to Paul.
I talked to Paul and Russ,
and I explained to them
that we
needed to go. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Oz. I'm just messing with you. Yeah.
All right, and that we needed to go to a two tight end set, even though we had Marshall, Beckham, and Shepard. And the reason being, it was trying to dictate pace. Now, I understand that we wanted our stars on the field, but at the same token, you have to be able to balance out. And it kind of made him have to balance out now instead of then. The other point that I have is that Seattle likes to play a high safety. It likes to play a single safety at the high. Well, I say like this. The receivers with Roger Lewis, Rudolph, and the other receiver that we have, they should be able to win their one-on-one matchup, because that would be able to – then you wouldn't be able to stuff the run, because you wouldn't be able to put eight in the box.
Yeah, but Haas, hold on. Last week you faced two of the best cornerbacks in football and Aqib Talib and Chris Harris. You want to trust Tavares King and Roger Lewis to be two of the best cover corners in the league one-on-one?
No, that's what I'm saying is just to keep them honest. That's the only thing I'm saying, because there's going to come a time where they're going to have to win their one-on-one matchup. We don't have to sling the ball, but we have to keep them honest. And that right there is, is just being able to game plan a little bit. Yes, we use Ingram. We use Rhett Ellison. So we just have to continue to do that more as far as that and be able to take our shots when we have the opportunity.
Okay, that's fair.
I don't disagree with that, Oz. But, I mean, keep in mind, remember, the reason why they ran it 32 times is they played with the lead from start to finish.
And it was working.
And it was effective. You're not going to have every game play out that way. There's going to be games moving forward, trust me, where Eli Manning's not going to be throwing it just 19 times. I'd be stunned. In an ideal world, they would love to have that ratio, but let's be realistic. There's going to be games moving forward. He's going to have to double the amount of pass attempts. And you're right. The guys are going to have to win their one-on-one battles. But I think realistically, now think about it. You're going up against Richard Sherman. You're going up against Earl Thomas. You're going up against Cam Chancellor. You're going up against very good coverage guys. Jeremy Lane maybe doesn't belong in that conversation because he's been banged up and doesn't have nearly as much experience. But, you know, the task doesn't get any easier, is my point, Haas, this week in terms of who you're expecting to win the one-on-one battles against.
Well, no, I agree. I agree 100%. My rebuttal to that is just when the opportunities are there, they need to take advantage of them.
No, absolutely.
I agree with that.
And the last thing I would say is watch for Egan, because Egan has a spark in the return game. He's giving us a spark. He's getting he got 10 yards, 20 yards. He's fast. He's quick. He's giving us a spark. fellas, watch him, because our punt return game is about to get explosive. Mark my words.
All right, sounds good, Haas. Appreciate it, buddy. Good stuff. I want to make sure I get one more call on Haas. That's why I had to let you go there. And I'll reference this, too, and I think this goes back to your point, Haas. Big Dash, again, on Twitter, attacked Jeremy Lane deep with Tavares King early, see how that groin strain is going to affect him. Tavares King's got really good straight-ahead speed. You want to challenge him deep a little bit? Now, the cover three is set up so that deep pass is not going to be there. That's how it's designed, but if you catch him in some man with the single high and the cover one, then, yeah, sure, you can try to get Lane deep with Tavares King. I got no beef with that. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, just like you want to see how effective Michael Bennett is early in this game, too, with him dealing with the foot injury. I think the Giants are going to have to test the waters whenever you have a number of players that are banged up. But, once again, even if Seattle is not fully loaded with all four players in the secondary, doesn't mean that they have a bunch of weaknesses. Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor, the luxury of having those two players out there, John, is when your corners do get beat, those guys can patch up the voids very quickly.
Especially Earl Thomas. As Eli Manning said the other day, he's all over the field.
The numbers show that.
Len in Columbia, Maryland gets to be our cleanup hitter. Hi, Len!
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great. How are you?
I think where we dominate on Sunday, and this is a key, is we got to beat up that Seattle offensive line. They're really not very good.
Yep.
And our defense has to dominate. I think from an offensive standpoint, well, the other thing, and here's a number for you. Here's my key number for Sunday. If Wilson runs, not counting quarterback sneaks, if Wilson runs for more than two first downs, we're in trouble.
I'll buy that.
We're in trouble.
I'll buy that. And I'll say this very simply, just because of how the rosters arrange now with the injuries at wide receiver, winning the battle in the trenches on both sides of the football has never been more important. Because if you can't run the ball or stop the run with the way the Giants' offense is now with all these injured wide receivers, you're in a lot of trouble.
Right. I think we have to try to run the ball. I think we got to try to run it early and often. The running game on Sunday against the Broncos opened up the playbook. I mean, it's just you can begin to show different formations.
Yeah.
You can go deep into the playbook.
Agreed.
We got to be able to run. We got to be able to run the ball. Can I talk about Fluka for a second?
Sure.
It'll be really interesting to see when Richburg comes back, what happens to Fluka.
Or Brett Jones, one or the other.
I think Richburg's going to center. I think he's going to go to center.
Okay.
And then the question will be, what do they do with Jones?
Well, but then you also have John, Jerry, or Fluker.
Then it's going to depend on what they do with John, Jerry.
Right.
And I think this has been my opinion. I hope he changes my mind before the season is over. My opinion on Fluker, he was brought in here he's worked his way through training camp, all that other things that you guys talked about. He's an insurance policy for John, Jerry. He's on the field because we got beat up with some injuries.
Has he taken advantage of that opportunity now, though, where he's going to earn his way to stay on the field? That's what we have to find out.
Well,
I don't know the answer to that.
I hope so. Lance, I hope so. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope you're right on that score. Let me just say something, but let me apologize to Lance before I start, because I've tried this before on Lance. I know he doesn't like this, but I firmly believe this. You were not going to beat the San Diego Chargers.
Or the L.A. Chargers,
Or the L.A. Chargers, thank you. The L.A. Chargers with former L.A. Chargers.
No, but Len, you can beat the L.A. Chargers with former San Diego Chargers.
Yeah. Thank you. Man, that's a good one. I think we got to get somebody better than Fluker. But look, hey, Sunday night, my estimation on the Sunday night game when our best players are playing their best, we got a real shot at winning the game. I mean,
those
15 core players, minus Vernon and Beckham who were hurt, but those and Shepard too. But those 12 to 15 guys, I mean, they played better than they played all season.
Well, Lennon, here's the thing: most of those guys are on defense, that's the healthier side of the ball. And Landon Collins said this too in the interview here on Sunday. He goes, "Look, we know about the injuries on offense. We know we have to play great football for this team to win, and I think the defense is accepting that challenge. Now let's see if they can do it for a second straight week."
And you know though, and let's go to the offense for just a second. I want to give a little credit. Justin Pugh, Eli, Ingram, and I'm going to throw Flowers in there. I haven't given up on Flowers. I believe that the ninth pick in that draft has a future somewhere on offense, on our offensive line. I got him in our core. I mean, he's one of my. I mean, if we miss on the ninth pick, that's disastrous. And it doesn't have to be at that position. But even on the offensive side the other night, there was an upgrade, guys. We played better. We simply played better,
especially up front.
I think we can compete with anybody when our best players are playing their best. Look at those three defensive backs: Collins, Jenkins, and Apple. They were superb. Goodson was superb.
And now DRC's
Pierre Paul
back.
Dominating. Well, Jenkins. The Snacks, Harrison, Tomlinson, our best guys, dominating.
Thank you, Len.
That's how you win games. Hey, thanks. Hey, let's go, John. Hey, guys, let's win a home game, please.
That'll make the home fans really, really happy, including Len from Maryland.
Never let your best customers leave your store unhappy, John.
All right, Len. I appreciate the phone call.
Yeah. Well,
see how one win changes the whole tenor of all these phone calls? I love it. It's about time. I was tired of getting all the same things all the time.
No, but Len's right in terms of the defense stepping up and stepping up across the board. See, that's what jumped out to me about the performance on Sunday. This is not a game where you said one player went above the X's and O's and made that game-changing play. I mean, everybody put their step. Landon Collins on a bad ankle had an interception, even though he didn't record, by the way, one tackle in the game, which is kind of surprising when you look at the
really
box score.
Did he really have zero tackles?
He had no tackles.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
He had the interception. Janoris Jenkins has the pick six. He mentioned Snacks. He has the sack. JPP has a career-high tying three sacks. Darian Thompson, Keenan Robinson, Eli Apple all played well in coverage. There were barely any missed tackles, not a lot of second-chance opportunities. They were stingy in the red zone. And then on offense, they milked the clock. They ran the football. They blocked well. Yeah, look at all of those things that went well. When one or two of those things have gone wrong in the previous two games, that's the difference between winning by a field goal or losing by a point. So, you know, the Giants have been in games this season. I've said this time and time again.
Except for maybe week one where they were
the
a
Cowboys.
Few scores down.
Correct.
Right.
But outside of that, I mean, even the Lions game, which doesn't reflect closeness, but the punt return for a touchdown was so late in the game. It was a one-possession game in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. All these games were competitive. They just were not getting the consistent things that I just threw out from all facets of the team. That has to happen moving forward. That's how you separate yourself from the rest of this league.
And to move a game 7 to 10 points any direction, it's not just one guy making one play. It's a few guys making plays, a few guys playing better. And you saw that happen, on, like Len said, on both sides, but especially on defense against the Broncos. And now they're facing a much better quarterback in Russell Wilson.
That is going to change things a little bit.
Now the offensive line isn't as good, but we'll see how they handle it against Seattle.
Well, you know, I don't get too caught up in the offensive line only because, you know, the Chargers were banged up too on the offensive line.
Sure.
And the Giants didn't necessarily have a field day with them. And we've seen some other teams that have also been a little bit shaky.
Banged up aside, the Seahawks have been a disaster for the better part of 3 years on the offensive
Correct.
Line. Russell Wilson's mobility has saved their bacon many
well,
times.
Well, and that's why, you just hit it right on the nose. That's why maybe I don't look at the offensive line so much, because you have a quarterback that can easily make up for some of those issues.
That's
Whereas
fair.
Most teams, like Phillip Rivers is not going to make up for things like Russell Wilson does.
No.
Because he doesn't have the same type of mobility. So it helps when you do have a quarterback that could change the dynamics of the offense.
No argument there. All right, folks, that's it for Big Blue Kickoff Live on this Friday. Giants and Seahawks comes your way Sunday. Kickoff at 4:25. Pre-game show, at least for right now, will be on WFAN starting at 2:10. I believe even if the Yankees go to Game 7 against the Astros, our pregame will still be on FAN at 2:10, and we'll be on there until the Yankee pregame would start, which I think would be sometime around 7-ish, but that has not been put in stone yet. We're all hoping for the Yankees to close it out in 6, so we don't have to worry about it. They smack around Justin Verlander tonight, and everyone's happy. We don't have to worry about them playing any games on Sunday, so... That's
well, I would assume so. The pregame show is going to definitely be on the fan regardless.
Actually, hold on a second.
I mean, I find it hard to believe that a pregame show for the Yankees. What time would the game be? What time's Game 7?
You know what? Time out. Hold on a second.
Is it Game 7 going to be in the evening?
Somebody just came to me yesterday, and it just clicked to me now. No, you don't even have to, because it's
Saturday.
It's a stupid statement
seven.
By
me. Yeah, wait a minute.
Somebody upstairs, I'm not going to name any names, came to me the other day, yesterday, and they're like, you know, we better hope the Yankees close us out, or Game 7, we're going to have a delay on Sunday. And I wasn't thinking. I was in the middle of something. I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. Just click. They play Friday and Saturday.
Of course.
We're going to be on Sunday at 2:10 on WFAN. Make sure you tune in, and we'll be on FAN the whole way, yes. Giants and Seahawks. So, and we're not going to have an issue next week when the Yankees hopefully are in the World Series because the Giants are on their bye week.
There you go. See, I didn't even bother to get that far ahead to look at what the World Series schedule
is. So delete what I just said in the last 60 seconds out of your mind, and just know we'll be on FAN at 2:10 on Monday with Lance Meadow, myself, Paul Dottino, and Jeff Fiegels. We'll see you then. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the fantastic weather. I'm guessing this will be your last weekend of 70 degrees, so make sure you enjoy it, folks. Falls are coming, and hopefully another Giants victory, and we'll go into the bye at 2-5. We'll see you on Sunday, everyone. Have a great day.
Have a good one.